Chief Economist for Florida Chamber of Commerce, Jerry Parrish, from a conversation we had here a few years back. Then I've got Kelly Dozier coming up in the first hour talking about Lemoyne's very famous Chain of Parks Art Festival. You don't want to miss this. Stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widden started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widden because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widden Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widden wanted, and it's been the Widden way of doing business for over 70 years. Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widden Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or WiddenGlass.com.
Once again, my friend, for another edition of Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, the one show that you can count on every week through the week to bring you the people that you otherwise would not necessarily get to, you know, talk to on the street sort of thing, or at your favorite social club or community group. Now, some of them are better known, perhaps, around town than others, but for the most part, we find it more interesting to talk with the folks who are getting their hands dirty, frankly. They're down in there working it and doing for their organizations, whoever and however they're involved. But those organizations that are many times directly tied to the quality of life for any of us in Tallahassee. In fact, the real Tallahassee, the five counties that make up this part of the world, and certainly North Florida. And so it happens that we've got Kelly Dozier with us in the second hour. No, she's in the first hour of the show. Sorry. So she'll be coming up here shortly to talk about this year's Lemoyne Chain of Parks Art Festival. Yes, boys and girls, once again, it's that time of year when art is on display in its magnificence for all to enjoy. And the thing about it, we'll talk with Kelly about this, but the thing about Lemoyne's open-air Chain of Parks Art Festival, I think, is precisely because it is for all of us. I mean, it's, you don't have to, you know, I mean, you can pretend to be a wealthy art collector if you'd like. That's always fun. You can hobnob with, you know, some of Tallahassee's elite. Some of those folks will be there. But in the main, it's the folks like you and I, who just, you know, enjoy seeing the works of artists from around the country. By the way, know this, highly ranked this art show is every year among artists. I mean, they look at how well they do. You know, it's a business for the vast majority of these folks. It's how they make their living. But they then report back annually as to how well the art show in question, whichever one they've attended, participated in, has produced for them, how many items they were able to sell and so forth. Lemoyne comes in there among the top always, at least for the last number of years, it certainly has. And this is a kind of resurgence, isn't it? A rebounding from, that goes for all of us, but certainly no less than the significance of this particular festival being a big part of Lemoyne's fundraising efforts through the year. I mean, they are a not-for-profit organization. We'll get into the details of that with our good friend Kelly Dozier. She pretty much is running the shop down there. And again, as I say, she's one of those people down in the trenches pulling all the levers and, you know, pushing the buttons and stuff. It's going to be a great show this year. I think you're going to enjoy being a part of that. A couple of announcements as I go forward here in this moment. The folks there that are in charge of trying to decide how the Northwood parcel, as it's been now dubbed, is going to be used. So the visioning, they're saying, this is the city of Tallahassee, the visioning continues for the future of said parcel. As a follow-up, the project's most recent community meeting, hosted in January, the city of Tallahassee is holding another community meeting, and that happened this last Wednesday, the 29th. So we're going to get some update coming forward from that meeting. But the point is that this is still very much in discussion, and it's like 20, almost 30 acres, a 30-acre parcel that the city purchased back in April of 2019. And at the time, the city was in the middle of site selection for possible future headquarters for the Tallahassee Police Department. So the center now has been recommended in that capacity as the new home for TPD. Okay, and one other reminder here. I've mentioned this to you prior. Leon County government now accepting applications for the summer youth training program for ages 14 up to 24. It's a 5-week program in which young folks, again, 14 to 24 years of age, can gain job experience by working with a Leon County department over the summer. And it is essentially a kind of paid internship, $10 an hour, 20 hours a week. And they can get involved in community and media relations or volunteer services, medical services, that is emergency medical services, the library, and a lot of other departments that can really use the extra hands. And this is a great opportunity for young folks. So if you want to apply, you need to do so now. Go to leoncountyfl.gov/summer-youth. And I believe that's case sensitive. So it's capital S, summer, and capital Y, youth, summer youth. All right, that's it. I want to also point out that we are in the midst of, or have now officially launched, our Tallahassee Food Challenge. And you've heard me talk about this, and you will. We've got a lot of other people coming forward. We had Sherry Hubbard with us last week, and looking to get Monique Ellsworth in here. And then, again, some of the folks that are on the front end of that, the delivery side of that, that are involved, I would say, at a street level, people who really see exactly how this effort benefits hundreds, even thousands of individuals and families in our community. The numbers are not encouraging when it comes to the size of this challenge, but we prevail in bringing this annual ad campaign. We've called it the Tallahassee Food Challenge because we want each of us then to take this challenge seriously, do the business of filling a bowl, and that's real easy in some terms, because you go to the website, TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com, click on the Donate Now button, and you're in business. And if you give a dollar, if you give $10, well, guess what? Second Harvest is going to take that and multiply it by 4. So you have this tremendous leverage available to you. Check it out online, TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com. Our presenting sponsor again this year the good folks at Gain Street Pies, along with Widen Glass and Truck and Car Concepts, Sellers Tile, and our friends out there at Wayne Fryer Homes here in Tallahassee.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Super Signs. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Super Signs is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Super Signs. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
The annual Chain of Parks Art Festival is a multi-day fine art festival with a two-day outdoor exhibit held in a group of city parks that you and I both know quite affectionately as the Chain of Parks in downtown Tallahassee. Well, there you go. The festival is ranked in the top 100 fine art festivals by Sunshine Artist Magazine, reaching number one in 2017, number five in 2018, and in 2019, they were ranked third. The festival awards, listen to this, over $10,000 in cash prizes with 135 juried artists that are competing. They are back with great excitement for 2022, the Chain of Parks Art Festival, and our good friend Kelly Dozier. This is what she does. Let's welcome our friend and guest, Kelly Dozier. Hi.
Hi, Brian. So happy to be here.
Yeah, I know you are. So with that, you're never going to resign, right? You're always going to do this. Forever.
Well, one of these days, I'm going to show up with my little garbage bag and just pick up garbage at the festival.
I thought you were already doing that.
Yes.
I mean, isn't that... beg your pardon, but did I say something here I shouldn't have said? Well, no, I find that among those, and I said this in the opening remarks here for today's broadcast, it has been our custom to seek out those who are really... at ground level when it comes to those things that best serve the community in whatever fashion. And certainly Lemoyne, for its history, has been one of those organizations, in my humble opinion, that has served us well in so many different ways. We're going to get into some of that detail with you. I'm thinking of artist education, the celebration of art as art, this festival we're now going to welcome with open arms. And then again, the manner in which artists are able to connect with each other. There's that sort of right sense of community, and it encourages the growth of, we'll call it the, you know, artistic or the arts community. And you're an example. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, you were like a kid when you were taking Lemoyne art classes.
I did start at a young age.
Only 20 years ago.
Right.
Give you that much.
I wish. Yes, my parents were members of Lemoyne back in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And I went to all the openings with them. I took art classes. I went to camp there.
Yeah.
Many people in our community have that experience. Many people got married there. We're in the process of redoing the gardens, expanding them, and restoring them.
I was going to ask you about that. Sorry to interrupt. The building that's directly next to your building is on the corner. That is also your property? No, that's not your property.
That used to belong to LeMoyne for a few years.
Okay.
LeMoyne restored it and then found that it was too difficult to maintain as a historic building. It was a beautiful building.
A lot of work there,
and it was too much of a burden because LeMoyne already owns another. The gallery building is also a historic building.
Right.
So LeMoyne sold it.
I see.
Basically during the recession, it was sold. And so LeMoyne does not own that. LeMoyne recently purchased the building on the south side of LeMoyne. It's currently a yellow stucco building.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Okay.
And it was a former law office. And that is being converted into our new art education center.
Classrooms.
Yes.
Exactly. And studios.
Yes.
So, but the restoration of that other building that once belonged to LeMoyne, that's what I've noticed in driving down Gadsden here a few days ago. That's got to be good in general for the neighborhood.
We are rooting for that building.
I mean,
it's the Monroe House. It's a beautiful historic building in our community, and it has been left to sort of decay for a few years, and so it's in pretty rough shape, but it's slowly being worked on. We're hoping it'll get there.
If you are intended, and I think you clearly are intended, to remain relevant, contributive, expanding in all that you bring to the community, you got to have not just the facility, you've got to have a sort of mindset, I think. So what I've noticed among those of you who are closest to the core of this organization, artists included, there is that notion that this isn't self-serving. This isn't just about us, you know, making ourselves feel good. Not that you shouldn't be entitled to that. But it really is about giving back. It is and investing further. Huh?
It is. It's about community. You know, I've always said that, you know, art hanging on the wall is nice, but that's not what it's all about. It's about the art drawing people in and creating a community around the art, around making art, appreciating art, celebrating art. And so LeMoyne is changing. I mean, the organization has been around since 1963. So obviously the world has changed and continues to change. And now we have a new change. You know, we went through a pandemic and things are different. Everybody is acknowledging that, you know, people are different. Things are different now. And so LeMoyne is on a journey that it actually started before the pandemic. But it fits right in. It actually, that shut down for a few months while it was painful. It gave a lot of people and organizations some time to step back and take a look at where we are, what we're doing, what we want to do. And with the award of $1 million from the CRA grant that LeMoyne applied for in 2018, it finally came around. And so LeMoyne, with other monies raised in the community, purchased this other building, which is perfectly situated to be our new education center. And so it will be more accessible. This is one of our goals, is to be ADA accessible as much as possible.
Right.
So that achieves that goal. Plus, it gives us better space, better lighting. It's just laid out perfectly for our studio education programs. And then the gardens that had been a wonderful place for people to get married over the years just, you know, started falling apart and roots pulled up the sidewalks, you know, and there's an area way back in the back that people don't even know exists. I call it the swamp jungle. And so, you know,
Grove.
Yes, but it's like a quarter of an acre, you know, that's right there in downtown Tallahassee. So with additional money and lots of community support, we're so excited about how the community has embraced this Art for Always project.
Yes.
And we're going to clean all that up and we're going to make it beautiful and expand the space and have a wonderful event space that the community can use for weddings, for all kinds of
That's
celebrations.
Awesome. Yes.
And at the same time, we're going to expand our ceramics program, offering visitors workshops and all kinds of fun experiences with alternative firings. And so the Swamp Jungle is just going to be this beautiful ceramic workspace.
Repurposed.
Yes.
Awesome.
So that's another exciting piece. So yes, we're changing. We're listening to the community and what the community is looking for from an organization like Lemoyne. And we're making those changes and we're seeing the support in return. So it's very
exciting.
Talking
with Kelly Dozier here about Lemoyne and this remarkable festival, Chain of Parks Art Festival, coming up here in April. You stay with me. We've got more.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom, conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453. I will try not to sing out of key.
Yeah. Oh, baby, how we're back. We're talking with Kelly Dozier. I just confirmed that I was wrong in my thinking, because I thought I was wrong, because I'm wrong a lot. She is the board lead director. That's her official title, at least it is for this week, right? Until
yes.
We come up with something else for you.
Yes.
But she has so many titles, and she referenced this earlier, you did. Your preparations start the day after you've completed a given year. It's like the Macy's Parade. They start the next day.
The next day, we talk about what went well, what didn't go well, what do we need to change, we need to fix that. You know, that didn't look quite right. You know, there was a little snag over there, let's fix that, you know.
And this is what I'm talking about. It characterizes the entire organization. And I know that you wouldn't take credit for all of that.
Absolutely not. We have a huge team of people.
Unless you can get away with it. But, right. But, I'm sorry, I'm in a goofy mood today. But I think that it does hold water that without the kind of vision, and here you are, someone who, and this is my point, you got involved in Lemoyne very early on in your life, and it's become, has been a part of your life, and it's become even more important as you have come into your adulthood and so forth, but at a level that is always forward thinking. You know what I mean? It's not just... To me, it's not just maintaining the status quo. It's about that question. What can we do better? What can we do? The educational aspects of this organization. My son taught, Morgan taught at Lemoyne, I want to say for a year, 2 years.
Wonderful.
His our next door neighbor's daughter was one of his students. All to say that the connectedness, all right, all of these dots that then form these patterns. Well, Morgan went on to be the artist of the year, new artist of the year in Texas. Art Journal voted him number one.
Amazing.
He had all these accolades come his way. But he talks about those days at Lemoyne as some of his most treasured. Why? Because he's working with young people who themselves were developing their craft, they're working their art. That's what Lemoyne does in that way.
Lemoyne touches people every day, and that's what's so rewarding to me about being involved. We hear about, like you, I mentioned earlier, people who've gotten married there, but Right now in the gallery is the high school show that happens every year. This is the 35th annual.
Nifty.
And that's where the young talent is on display. And those young people who've created amazing works of art are so taken with the fact that their art is up in a professional gallery where professional artists show their art. And it looks beautiful, and it has a little tag that has their name on it and the title of their piece, and it gets judged by judges, and awards are given, and scholarships are given. And we run into people who are in their 50s, and they recall, you know, when either their kids or younger kids have shown there, and it has an impact on them. It really provides confidence. It's just amazing to hear what an impact it has on people. Taking classes there, going to events and meeting people, it doesn't seem like it would, but it does. We did a survey a few years back and asked 1,000 people. We got 350 responders, which is pretty good. Asked, you know, how many of you would say that LeMoyne had a positive impact on your life? And it was up there in the mid-90s. So, you know, that's a lot.
And if I can extend that in a little bit different direction, some of the people themselves who have been at your side in all of this effort, and we lost one of those contributors who for years, right, was part of this. He passed away here.
Ronnie Rabedra?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
February, I think, or
yeah,
January.
He just passed away a few weeks ago. Yeah.
And the outpouring, that's what I noticed, the outpouring of affection and memories and admiration and gratefulness for that man who was a big part of LeMoyne, wasn't he?
He was. Back in the 80s, he was a volunteer executive director for several years and was a big volunteer. But he was an art professor at FAMU, and he had his studio was at Railroad Square. He was, I think, one of the first artists to go out there and set up a studio. And he would hold court there on First Fridays, and just such a wonderful person and so generous. He would always help out. He would donate his beautiful artwork to LeMoyne to auction or sell or raffle. I remember one year we raffled one of his pieces at the festival.
That's cool.
He would volunteer. He would speak. He would judge. You know, he never said no. And just a beautiful person, and such a you know, so lucky to
it,
know
it is
him.
In some respects, for at least for me, a sort of demonstration, I guess, or an illustration of how Tallahassee is benefited by key individuals like him, like you. It is a town where we find these sorts of things going on, and in and of themselves, they're formidable, they're remarkable events. So my heart, my hope, is that more of us will recognize what we have here in front of us. And it's not just for people who are, let's say, you know, art aficionados or devoted art collectors, anything of that sort. Plenty of those too.
Yeah. Well, the festival is
it's just for everyone.
For everyone. And that's the whole point of it is people might stumble into art. You know, art is a natural thing. People are born wanting
Randy
to draw and create things.
That's a great example of that.
Yep.
Debbie'd been at it for a long time.
Yep.
Randy was selling insurance
yes.
when I first met him. Bought mutual funds from Randy. This is back in the early 80s. And turn around, and the guy is this formidable
he is.
Artist, as is Deborah.
Yeah. They're quite the power art couple. right. But and they're at the festival. They're at the festival every year. It's a big time for them. But you know, we add other elements to the festival. It is a fine art festival, so we want to focus on that. We don't want to be a carnival. We don't want to be anything other than that. But
a lot of amenities, though.
Lot of amenities, and we have a very active area called the Village, where we have children pop-up studios, and that's where kids can get their hands onto a project, and it's all free. They get to take it home. We have community partners, and the requirement there is that you can't just have a table. There has to be some kind of interactive piece to your booth so that people are engaged, and it's not just this boring thing to walk past.
Right.
We have entertainment, live entertainment going on all day long. We have our Saturday evening groove with Tallahassee Night Live, which is fabulous.
Tallahassee Nights is performing. Yeah,
yes.
That's right. I forgot about
5:30
that.
5:30 to 7:30 on Saturday night.
Okay, we're going to come back from this break. We're going to get into some of the juicy stuff. Folks, you stay with me. I've got Kelly Dozier here. You are in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back and we're talking about this remarkable Chain of Parks Art Festival having pressed forward in all of the obstacles of the last year and a half, 2 years, April 23rd and 24th, Artists in the Park. Okay, so you got to kind of take notes here with me. Opening night's presentation with presenting artist Lana Shuttleworth, that is on the 21st. Right, Kelly?
Yes.
Right, and then the artist workshop is the 22nd.
Yes.
Okay, so what you have to do, folks, is you just have to take the 21st to the 24th and go into your daytimer and just, or I guess we don't use daytimers anymore, go to your phone, block off those days in April and just say, hey, this is what I'm doing, right?
Yeah, yeah, just enjoy it. You know, we want to bring people into our community also. That's one of our goals. Some of our major funders are Visit Tallahassee and the city and the county.
They like
you. They want us to bring people to our community. It's a great economic impact.
They've designated Chain of Parks Art Festival as a legacy event.
Yes.
Which means because you are responsible for 40,000 plus visitors and patrons every year.
Yes. Well, and that was before COVID. So last year we had to do a limited festival. This year we've opened the doors, no gates, no tickets.
We don't even count that.
And we're gonna bring it on and with the entertainment and the children's area
you mentioned
open
Tallahassee,
again.
Tallahassee Nights. Let's talk about that. That's a very cool group, aren't they?
They are so much fun. They put the groove on, and you will find me out there dancing from 5:30 to 7:30.
With your garbage bag in one hand.
with my cowboy hat on.
Cowboy hat
and my tired feet. But I will be there because it's so much fun. And it is dancing in the streets. And
it is awesome.
And we love that. And we haven't been able to have that for the last 2 years. So
let's talk about how many artists you have registered at this point.
We have 150.
Yeah. Is that a cap? You go.
We have capped it. Yeah. Before COVID, we did 170. And then we had to cut it back to 100 last year. So we opened it up again, but we decided to still keep a few less, so we have a little more room to maneuver. The artists have a little more space, and people aren't overwhelmed with the number of booths that are there. So you can do it. You can come and see all the artists and walk around. And we've got food vendors. You can pick up your lemonade or your gourmet food in food court. It's a wide variety of local food trucks.
Well, that is the fact. And the notion, too, that you can bring your entire family. You can spend as much or as little time as you care to and then come back later. And it's all free admission.
It is. And it's there for 2 days. Two days.
Man.
So if you don't like big crowds, then come on Sunday. It's a little quieter on Sunday.
Yeah.
It is. And you know, there are people who travel to these. I'm one of them who travel to art fairs and art shows. And so there's a strategy, you know, you go early and you look around and then you come back and that's when you do your shopping on the second day when you can really, you know, spend more time and dive deeper into
deeper
what
dive.
You're interested
with
in.
With that in mind, and because you are seasoned in your experience with these other festivals, begs the question, what do you learn when you're out there and you're seeing other people do what they do? Does that inform you or do you go, hey, we tried that one time. It's not a good idea. I mean, just curious how that works for you as a process.
There's a lot of that. I'm always looking, got my phone. I take pictures. There are pieces, parts in our festival that have been picked up from what I've seen in other festivals.
Okay.
You know, the award flags that we created 1 year for the artists so that you can really see them down the lane, those, you know, we didn't have. And then I went to Pensacola and they used them. And I'm like, wow, we need
idea.
To make some of those.
Right.
Because now you can just look and say, oh, those are the people who won awards. The awards are given out at the end of the day on Saturday. That's another benefit of coming on Sunday.
Right.
Now you know who the judges picked for awards. There are a lot of things. The whole village piece is something that was put together. Winter Park Art Festival, they have a children's area. We started out with a table.
Okay.
And now we've got this whole village area. So all of this has been grown over the years, and we learn what works well. But bottom line is we want this festival to be a Tallahassee homegrown festival.
Indeed.
We want people to learn about the best of Tallahassee.
I can affirm that with great enthusiasm. It is indeed a Tallahassee signature event, and congratulations in that capacity. I think you've definitely put, you know, Tallahassee's thumbprints all over this thing, and have for some time. I want to ask you about the Rain Barrel Artist Workshops.
Okay, well,
tell us about that.
This
happens
is
on the 22nd.
This is a lot of fun. So TAP is a city program about taking
water.
Responsibility for water cleanliness and your own personal pollution and all that. So they had some plastic barrels that some liquid came in that they used to treat water. It's clean because they treat our drinking water with it.
Right.
But now they've got these empty barrels.
What
so
to do?
They have repurposed those as rain barrels.
Neat.
And they contacted us about working together to get the word out about rain barrels. And so they provided the rain barrels or the barrels and they put the fittings on them. So they have a little spout that you know, faucet spout at the bottom so you can attach a hose or whatever.
Right.
And then we are doing two things with those. One, we have a public art exhibit that's going to be downtown starting April 1.
Huh.
We have 8 painted, professionally painted rain barrels that are going to be all over downtown Tallahassee. So you can see those as you drive around in April. Those will end up at the festival and will be auctioned off in a silent auction at the festival.
Oh.
They're beautiful.
I love it.
And then, the Friday before the festival, we have Patty Maney, who's going to conduct a workshop for 8 people who want to paint their own rain barrels. And so we have A to blank. They're ready to be painted.
Yep.
And if you sign up for this workshop, you get to paint your own barrel and then take it home with you. So it's
wow.
a great deal.
Wow.
You get to make it your own.
Don't
and then
you love
you've got
this, folks? This
beautiful
is great.
Rain barrel.
This is very great. And I noticed that Jacques Lemoyne will
he's
be
back.
There.
He'll
be
back. He's been gone for a couple of years, but now he's going to be back.
Well,
and
there was
get
a contract negotiation afoot. I know it was kind of an awkward situation for you,
yep.
but you worked it out. That's what you do. Her name is Kelly Dozier, loved by many and admired by even more folks who recognize her contributions in this organization and other organizations right here in Tallahassee, Florida. Again, the date's 21st through the 24th. Write it down. Put it in your phone. And then spread the word. Right, Kelly?
Yes, and you can learn more at chainofparks.com. And
there you
thank
go.
You, Brian. That's
sweet.
Beautiful words.
Ah, well, it's what it said right here on my... Be sure to compliment Kelly at this moment. Yeah, so, done. Folks, this is what we love doing, and it's so good to have Kelly with us again. We're going to have you come back in April. We'll talk further about some of the other developments and things that are going to come up as we go forward. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Brian.
Folks, that's what I have for you here at the moment. We're coming up to the top of the hour. You stay with me. We've got more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs, too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Well, my friend, we're back here in the second hour, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, as always. Glad to have you aboard. Got a great conversation in the first hour there with Kelly Dozier. Wow. You know, there's so much going on around town this time of year, all the festivals and stuff, right? Springtime is today. Springtime Tallahassee Parade, isn't that today? I think that's today. Yeah, April 2nd. So anyway, we're just chock full of great stuff. So get out there and enjoy yourself, my friend. Figure out what's going on. Easy to do, really, because you can go to TallahasseeTalks.com. We have a community calendar there for you under community. And that'll give you a listing of some of the stuff we know about. Or go to Visit Tallahassee. That's a nice way to do it. VisitTallahassee.com. They're always interested in promoting local things going on around town. We have this wonderful individual, Jerry Parrish. He's in this second hour. Tallahassee Talks, so that you and I have a chance to hear from him going back a couple of years. At the time that he was presenting his data points, he's the chief economist over there at the Florida Chamber, talking about the challenges that this part of the country faces, particularly North Florida, and certainly within Leon County. Of late, you will recall that I've brought to your attention some of the pretty discouraging numbers regarding poverty, income entrenchment, generational poverty. That means that not only is this individual not in a good place, their kids are likely to not be in any better place if they remain in this community. And for a lot of folks that are near and dear to that issue, that are close to the ground, we'd say, they're in the fight, That's just unacceptable. So we have then a kind of multi-level threat to deal with. It's the immediate needs, and so our Tallahassee Food Challenge is about keeping us encouraged to give generously and give often, donate to Second Harvest so that they can better supply all of the food charities in the region, 11 counties that rely on either food coming their way or the direct distribution through Second Harvest's various neighborhood locations. And there's a bunch of them now. They've been working pretty hard to expand that network of distribution. Well, we can help. You know, $10 will buy $40 worth of food in the hands of Second Harvest. So that's a good thing, isn't it? Meanwhile, back here, we are determined to keep you better informed of all of that. And with Jerry Parrish coming to us from this prior conversation, I want you to listen carefully when he talks about some of the anomalies, I guess you'd say, some of the unintended consequences of public aid, public assistance programs that actually discourage somebody from getting a better paying job than what they have currently. Why? Because the way that the rules are written, if they exceed a certain level of income, well, they lose the benefits. And I mean, they don't just gradually decline. They're no longer eligible for any of it. Okay, so you have an individual who is looking to advance their well-being for themselves, for their families, and they're offered a position that pays better than what they have, but doesn't pay well enough to replace all of the money that's coming by way of public assistance. So they're in that sort of, well, what they call it is ALICE, Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed. So you have the working poor who are relying on these benefit programs to make it, and not just paycheck to paycheck, but just trying to get from week to week, day to day. So we have that immediate need for the support that they get by way of these food charities. Then you have larger issues that have to do with opportunity for growth, for advancement. And that, of course, comes back to education in many respects, and maybe as a most fundamental part of that. Helping them not just through skill acquisition, you know, training and such, but it's at the same time understanding that there's a different, I would call it a different mindset, almost a kind of subculture when it comes to jobs that are professional in nature, that generally pay better. Either you have a working individual in a trade, a craft, that itself is paying pretty well, you know, and you think of electricians and plumbers and carpenters and stuff like that, or you have people in managerial positions or who are in some kind of supervisory position, and those salaries are more productive, just better money. Okay, but to get there, there has to be a shift in the way that you think about work. And in many cases, you find people that are really still looking at the work they do as a this for that, quid pro quo. And, you know, I had this job and I was doing my work, but the boss said it wasn't enough. I had to do more. Well, I didn't like that, so I quit my job. Or I said, no, I'm not doing any more. This is as much as I'm going to do. And he fired me, or he found somebody else who could fill that position. Has to be a shifting in the what we just, I guess, generally call a work ethic, that you work until it's not just you know, filling out the time card. You work until the work is at a point of excellence or a point of proficiency that you really are irreplaceable. If anything, you're working to work yourself out of a job, working yourself into a better paying position. Well, that's the challenge that Jerry Parrish is going to put in front of us. Again, chief economist the Florida Chamber of Commerce. I think for us as a broadcast, it is honestly a charge we have as our responsibility, I think, to continue to advance that notion and remind us of who we really are, which is great in many ways, like the Chain of Parks Art Festival. We talked with Kelly about that. Like many of the other advancements that we see, the growth of our business community. But if we don't at the same time, in the same way, acknowledge where we need to make changes, and not just in surface level, not in structural issues, not even in more programs and such, we really need to think in terms of how we define who we are. And if we can be a part of all of the wonderful things that we're talking about here, including Chain of Parks, and at the same time, we look for ways that we can, as a community, include more people, get more people involved. I mean, if it involves going across town and picking somebody up and saying, hey, I want you to come with me to this festival. You're going to have a great time. And no, it's free admission, and you're going to meet some great folks along the way. You're going to see some great art. It's that level of involvement that gets us out of our comfort zone, maybe, gets us off the couch, and gets us involved in other people's lives.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Dr. Jerry Parrish is the chief economist and the director of research for the Florida Chamber Foundation, and in that role, he is responsible for conducting in-depth analyses on the Florida economy and on solutions to help secure Florida's future. He is currently an adjunct instructor in the Master's in Applied Economics program, Florida State University, earned his bachelor's in Agricultural Business and Economics from Auburn. Master's in Business from Bellarmine University, Master's of Science in Economics from University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and his Doctorate in Economics from Auburn University. Regularly publishes research reports and articles on the Florida economy and Florida's competitiveness. Let's welcome to the show Dr. Jerry Parrish. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Is it frequent for you to bring that sort of inclusive perspective, that broader perspective, the whole story, you might say?
It is, and when I speak to business groups around the state, and not only me, it's my boss, Tony Carvajal, who's the executive vice president of the Chamber Foundation, and his boss, Mark Wilson, who's the CEO of the Florida Chamber. We talk about poverty no matter where we are, and one of the things we show is on the Florida Scorecard. And that's our data website that's free and available to use for everybody. You can find it at www.thefloridascorecard.org. Mm-hmm. There's not only poverty rates for every single county in this state, and you know, third grade reading scores and all the metrics that are important to our future. You know, it's for every single county, and it's available to where you can click on the website. You can download a chart. You can download the raw data. You know, make your own presentation. But we want all the business leaders around the state to use numbers to see how mm-hmm. we're doing on these important metrics. I see that there is a lot of opportunity here in Leon County. But also, one of the things we track on our Florida scorecard is the metrics from the book and the website, How Money Walks. Mm-hmm. So you can click on the website and see every single county in Florida and where people have moved into and left and gone to, and it's weighted by their adjusted gross income. And you will notice that that Leon County is one of the counties who have a negative number attached to it. But quite honestly, a lot of that is college kids who come here to get educated, and then they leave. The number one place weighted by money is King County, Washington for Leon County. So people move into Seattle, and you can assume that a lot of those are people who have graduated from FSU, maybe FAMU as well. The same phenomenon happens in Alachua County. So Gainesville students at UF are also that way. But you can track where the money is moving to and moving from. Mm-hmm. And it's surprising. There's a lot of people in North Florida from Miami-Dade and Broward counties who may have retired up here or moved up here to take jobs. It's a fascinating look, and you can see that on the floridascorecard.org.
That is a good resource, isn't it, that Florida Scorecard? And your team responsible for creating that. And I think you made mention that if we want to contact Florida Chamber, that actually comes to your email inbox, right?
Exactly.
So if I really want to annoy you, I have a means to do so. Huh?
Well, we get interest in these numbers and people wanting some explanations, further explanations. And
right.
Sometimes they want numbers that aren't on the scorecard, and
right.
we're glad to help them. But
right.
yes, when you hit that contact us button, it comes directly to my inbox.
Yep.
And I wouldn't want to leave TCC out of it, because they're doing things like one of the things, and I spoke over in Gadsden County recently, one of the things that TCC does is give scholarships to kids from Gadsden County that have a 3.0 grade point average or higher. Huh. They get their first year at TCC for free, no tuition.
Wow.
And that's a great program that's helping economic development in this state. And I have to give tip my hat to Dr. Jim Murdaugh over there and his board who've come up with that program. I think that's an awesome way to help develop, the counties in this area and give opportunity to kids that may not be able to get it any other way.
And especially Gadsden County, which when we look at it from your vantage point, is even less pleasant, even more disturbing in terms of economics, in terms of household incomes, right?
Well, I think you'll look, and I've done a lot of research on this, and some of it's been misused, to be blunt, but I've done a lot of look at the counties that have, which counties have more jobs now than they did before the recession. And it's a nationwide trend that the rural counties have done less well than the more urban counties. And it's not just in Florida, and it's all over the country. So there's still quite a few counties who have less jobs now than they did before the recession, not just in Florida, but around the country. And that's one of the issues when you don't have a metropolitan area like we do here in Leon County. You take all the rural counties surrounding us, and in a lot of cases, their job growth is substantially slower than it is here in Leon.
Right.
And of course, the bigger metro areas are doing the best now. So, Orlando and Jacksonville and Miami and Tampa are doing really well. And it's that way all over the U.S. That, when you look at the rural counties, especially in North Florida, but there are also some in South and Central Florida as well, that they're not doing as well as far as terms of job creation and opportunity. I'm going to get a chance to speak at the Apalachicola River Conference here in the next couple of weeks. That's one of the things I'll be focusing on, the counties that are on both sides of the river. And, they're under that same exact phenomenon that's happening all over the country.
We're talking with Jerry Parrish. He is the chief economist for Florida Chamber of Commerce Foundation. You're in tune with
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557. Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're back. We're talking with Dr. Jerry Parrish, Ford Chamber Foundation, talking about Leon County and Florida's economic health. In addition to some of those more disturbing elements, we'd say, or issues concerning families that are impoverished and remain and seem to be entrenched, or we seem to be struggling to find a way to bridge that gap. And I mean, I know there's a lot of effort, United Way particularly, and I know that you had a direct hand in developing the ALICE program, right? ALICE, no?
I was one of the research team for the Florida report, but I don't want to take credit for developing it.
Oh, come on. I'm sure they wouldn't mind. No. Okay, well then let's make sure that we understand that you contributed in that capacity. And for those who don't know, this is an asset-limited, income-constrained individual who is employed. So that's the ALICE acronym, Asset-Limited, Income-Constrained, Employed. And I've said to the folks who were listening before that it's somebody who's landlocked and they can't really make a move in terms of their own income without giving up some benefit that they have via social welfare provisions. You've done a lot of work in that area too.
Right, and not only me, but some of my grad students at FSU have done a lot of work on that, and that really helped me understand it. What I did was, after the student project, I wrote a 16-page report that talks about the fiscal cliffs. And basically, a fiscal cliff is somebody who comes, who is in that situation where a marginal increase in their income makes them lose that social program that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's especially difficult on people who have young kids that are in subsidized childcare. That's the biggest cliff mm-hmm. that people have to navigate. Mm-hmm. And so, in what my paper wrote about was how that distorts the labor market. And it does all over the state. Somebody can't take a raise, they can't take a promotion, or they won't work those extra hours because they know if they do, they'll lose some program, and they gain a few dollars by working, a couple hours extra, but they could lose literally thousands of dollars worth of benefits, and it mostly affects young kids. And so, what my paper said is it was written to the business community. And it said, hey, understand that this is happening. It's not fair to business. It's not fair to individuals. And if we could just make a more linear path out of poverty, instead of something that where you're faced with multiple cliffs on the way out, that it would distort.
So it would be incremental. Let's say I take a certain X number of dollars increase in pay.
but there's a commensurate then sort of gradual tapering off and not a complete loss of those benefits, right?
Right. The tapering, the gradual tapering is what you would want, where people still have incentives to make more money, work more, come back into the workforce even. That gives them the opportunity to make more. And, we all know how expensive it is as business people to retrain someone. What if you lose somebody because they can't, they can't get in the labor force and you have to retrain somebody? That's a serious cost for business in this state.
I'm going to ask you to do something that economists hate doing, and that is to interpret that from a cultural perspective. Do you think it's our presumption then about this population?
I don't believe that. What I think is, we've gotten a bunch of combination of federal and state programs that have distorted the labor market. But we have so many people who are willing and able to get out. We just can't trap them in with a big cliff. So I see things, programs that I've seen around town. I've noticed the Capital Area Community Action Agency. And they're getting ahead instead of just getting by. I know that's the wrong name of it.
I forget now, too. But
it is called the Getting Ahead program.
Right.
And I've seen what they've
done. It's a retraining, basically, isn't it?
It is.
Teaching them how to balance a checkbook.
And exactly. A lot of skills that maybe they didn't learn from their parents.
Right.
And it's just... skills of living, it's social capital, it's matching mentors, who are in the business world with people who are, really trying hard to get out of poverty.
Okay.
And so those things work.
So these cliffs you're talking about are the result of unintended consequences, we'd say.
Right.
So nobody positioned themselves to say, well, these poor people, this is what they're going to need. But we've let that accumulate over time. And like you say, maybe there's a kind of layering of state, county, city, federal provisions, and you end up creating that situation unintentionally for these people who then are in an Alice situation. They're landlocked.
Yeah. Right. And I've heard from employers. I was sitting in a meeting one day, and an employer said, listen, this is how it works in our business. I have people bringing calculators to job interviews, and they will sit there and calculate, what the salary means to them, this new job that they've just been offered, and whether they can still
afford
that job and keep their kids in subsidized child care. That's the biggest thing that we see. So it mostly affects people with young kids. It's not such a big cliff for other groups of people. But keep in mind that when these young kids, if they can get a good start to their schooling, get moving in school and do well as they go into public school or wherever they go, one of the things we key on is third grade reading scores. Kids that fall behind at that point,
not a good thing.
Really hard time. So,
yep.
What we can do to make their family life smoother, and keep those kids in some, some good
that first 8 years
situation.
Particularly. First 5 years developmentally, but educationally, by third grade, you've got some strong indicators, don't you?
That's why you see on the Florida scorecard, that's one of the key metrics that we track, third grade reading scores.
Okay.
It's on there for every single county.
Interesting.
And it's on there for the state.
Because that's a predictor for you. It's a predictor variable.
It is. And there's a couple of things, and I've said this in public. You give me about three metrics to show how a county's going to be doing in the future.
Yeah.
I would pick third grade reading scores. I would check, improvements in the poverty rate. And I would also pick, the amount of people, how the job market is doing for them right now.
Yeah. So level of employment generally.
Of employment, are they increasing
over time? Yeah.
Because there is some momentum there. If you're doing well, businesses are more likely to come. But high school graduation rate is another one. So take those metrics and you
there's your future right there.
That will be a big predictor of the future.
And in that regard, Leon County is doing okay?
we could do better?
Leon County, every county could do better. Leon County is really good at high school graduation rate, above the state average. And okay. You know, we've come up in this state by many, many percentage points. It's not been that long ago to where we had barely over 50% high school graduation rate. One of the things I ran last year was at the end of the school year, a little metric. In 2017, 37,908 public high school kids did not graduate with their cohort. Mm-hmm. And that's a big number. You know, that's nearly 20% because we have just barely
across
Florida.
37,000.
37,908. Mm-hmm. And in Leon County, that was 155 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we know some of them will end up graduating or getting the GED.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Leon County's got some really good numbers here, but that's still 155 kids. You know, what's going to happen to them?
Right.
If they don't graduate from high school, on average, they'll make $250,000 less than the kids that do. And Florida runs on sales taxes. Now 78%, number just changed, of our general revenue as a state comes from sales and use taxes. Mm. We need people making as much money as we can get them to make and spending it on taxable goods in Florida, because that's that's more than $1 out of every $4 out of our state budget.
Wow. He is the chief economist for the Florida Chamber of Commerce Foundation. Dr. Jerry Parrish is our guest. You stay with me. I've got more.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio. And you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're talking with Jerry Parrish here. He is the chief economist for the Florida Chamber of Commerce Foundation. So to me, there's been a sort of heartening response to that whole problem from their side. You agree?
I do, and I really have to point out a couple of things. Not just TCC, which I think really are training the people that the market is demanding right now.
Mm.
What's been, a couple things have encouraged me. One is we wrote a report called Florida Jobs 2030. That's talking about the jobs we're going to need for the future. Mm. It was sponsored. We got research money from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to do this report. And what was, probably the high point of my research career is when all of our Florida college system, our state college, our two-year colleges, have adopted that report and started working their curriculum toward producing those graduates that we say we're going to need. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of these industries is there are entry points, and you don't have to have a college degree to get into these industries.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get a high school degree, there's opportunities in. You get a chance to get more training and move up the ladder in these industries, and there's some really good jobs. Mm-hmm. It's things like advanced manufacturing and just, healthcare. Mm-hmm. Healthcare is a great need for the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. And we see community colleges like Tallahassee Community Colleges doing a great job at responding to the market.
Yeah.
We also see our friends at CareerSource Florida responding to the market, providing training to get people that want to work into a career. One of the big things we see is there's a big, big need for, we call it employability skills. A lot of people call it soft skills.
Mm.
But this really came out in that Florida Jobs 2030 report.
Going back to what Tim Senter had initiated when he came on board, right? As an example.
Right.
Teaching people how to balance a checkbook.
Yeah, and teaching people how to show up for work and work together with their teammates and solve problems and those employability skills.
Right, right.
A lot of people, fortunately, Florida's got an advantage. We got this monster hospitality industry in this state. What employers that talk to me are finding out is if they need somebody with a technical skill,
right,
it's easier to take somebody who's got really good employability skills, help them get a technical skill,
and train them yep,
than it is the other way around. So our tourism industry has been a great provider of highly trained people for all the businesses in the state of Florida.
Yeah.
And so Florida's actually got an advantage when we look to the future in this metric.
It's that level of personal, I guess you'd say, accountability and self-discipline and that kind of stuff. I brought up Tim Senter because I remember him saying, the biggest challenge for them
was to help this individual realize the big differences in blue collar, we'll call it, working class versus a middle income or white collar sort of environment. You know, he said in their world, you dig the ditch. You were asked to dig the ditch. You did it. Job is done. But in a professional setting, you wrote the press release. Now you have to edit it and resubmit it. And that makes no sense to them whatsoever. Why are you asking me to do this over again? And it's almost insulting. You know, I did the job. Well, what's the deal? And he said it's that kind of acculturation that takes time and for people to begin to realize this is how it works here. If you want to stay employed in these kinds of settings, those are examples of the kind of skills you need to have. But that's the time that they may not have if they're working 8-9 hours a day taking care of the kids. So that becomes an additional challenge, doesn't it?
Right. It does. You know, a couple of the really big things that people face are not only childcare, you know, that's a big issue. Not only the cost, but getting, you know, the transportation to get their kids to childcare and get to work. So when we think about helping people get out of poverty, you cannot overlook the transportation issue. It comes up time and time again. It's one of the big issues in the state. We've just done a project that where we've gone around to every single county in the state and done town halls, and it's called Florida 2030. Mm-hmm. This is our strategic plan for the state of Florida. And literally, we've had more than 10,000 people live in rooms, you know, talking about the future of Florida. Transportation's a big issue around the state. Honestly, affordable housing is another issue that people are struggling with in a lot of parts of the state.
Wow.
Not as much here as it is in Central and South Florida. But there's a lot of issues that we're working on, you know, with this project. Mm-hmm. We'll be out with the results of it over the next few months. But I think it'll be something that people will want to read, people will want to pay attention to, because it literally is a privately funded strategic plan for the entire state. And it's something that the Chamber Foundation does about once every 10 years.
Mm.
Yeah, they used to be called the Cornerstone Reports.
I remember
this
that.
This one is called Florida 2030.
Okay.
And it'll be out, release it in several different parts over the next several months.
Okay. Now, remind us how we can find those resources, the website again, right?
Yes. The Florida Scorecard you can find at www.thefloridascorecard.org.
Okay. Thefloridascorecard.org.
Right.
Okay. Now, your email address, I don't need to know, because all I have to do is just say contact, and that'll show up in your inbox.
At the bottom of the Florida Scorecard, it says contact us. That means contact Jerry.
And
then
I just need to know, is that going to show up like on your cell phone while you're out there at, you know, looking at the alligators lakeside and you're just relaxing and bing, here comes the email from Brian again.
It does, and it comes in at all hours of the day and night.
This is wonderful. I love this.
But I could turn my phone off, I guess.
Nah, don't do that. Then again, I might not be able to get you to come back if I abuse your kindness. Well, Dr. Jerry Parrish, what a delight and a storehouse of information. And kudos to you for your pursuit of these topics that otherwise I think would remain unknown, certainly, and undiscovered. And I would say, too, in the future, we need to have you back more often. What else you got before you go?
Well, one thing I'm encouraged about, some of the people that are county commissioners were at the chamber breakfast that I was at the other day. And
yes.
They've invited me to help with, along with the United Way, to do a workshop on Tuesday, May the 8th. Looks like the date it's going to be. So I'm looking forward to doing that.
And that's open to the public?
I assume it is. It's open to the public.
Tuesday, May 8th. Okay.
And it'll be something that, you know, it's really encouraging that the county commissioners are really willing also to take a look at this issue. And let's start coming up with some solutions for Leon County.
Practical solutions. Wonderful.
Thank you, sir, for your kindness, for your insight, for your pursuit of all those things that we need to know so we can do a better job at caring for this county that is ours and caring for one another. Dr. Jerry Parrish, our guest, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Folks, we're the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat Radio right here in Tallahassee. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best, like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.